You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Lorraine Adams is a critic, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, and a novelist. Her first novel, Harbor, won a number of awards, including the Los Angeles Times Book Prize for First Fiction. And now she has a new novel, The Room and the Chair, which has been described as a dissection of the shadowy worlds of espionage, counterterrorism, and journalism. It's published by Knopp. I'm very pleased that it brings her to our show today. I didn't know there was a shadowy world of journalism.
Well, you know, probably not here today because it's very sunny and beautiful.
Isn't one of the nobler professions?
Wait, espionage or journalism?
Journalism.
It was, I think, for about 5 minutes, and then everyone kind of over-remembered those 5 minutes. But yeah, if you look at the history of journalism, it's a very patchy, disreputable history.
And a large part of this novel takes place in a newsroom at the Washington Spectator, which is obviously based on the Washington Post.
That's right.
How long did you work at the Post?
I worked at the Post between 1992 and 2001 as a staff writer, and then I became a contract writer who wrote about culture and books for 2 years.
But not about espionage.
I've never covered anything to do with intelligence.
Well, you were in Washington. How much intelligence is there in Washington? it is full of real characters. Did you base any of your characters on real people?
It's interesting. I spent several years getting to know a military intelligence operative, but that was after I was a journalist. This man would never have spoken to me during the years I was a journalist. And one of the interesting things I used to do with him is we would sit and read The New Yorker, particularly Cy Hirsch, and he would point out how this wasn't true and that wasn't true, and how someone had fed Hirsch something that was completely false. And I was very intrigued by that.
And do you think he was right, or was he? Could he also have been playing you?
He could have been playing me.
Mm-hmm. Because it's hard to tell, isn't it? We're dealing with one of the most secretive worlds here. We're not even sure when we get the memoirs of the people who lived in that world just how much they're telling the truth.
Yeah, and that's why reporting on that world is one of the most imaginative and philosophically challenging areas of journalism.
And what you've done here is you've kept the sections concerning the military world and the civilian world quite separate because never the twain shall meet ultimately.
Wait, can you just repeat that one more time to me? Somehow my brain went into like a
well,
food
you know, we
state.
Have, we
probably
go into
state
one,
engineered.
We go in one world and we have these two different women who are the key characters here. But, it's hard to put the two of them together
because
they're so different. They speak different languages.
Yes, you're referring to Mary and Vera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
In first drafts of this story, I had them actually come upon one another and not recognize each other, even though one of them had been assiduously seeking the other. I ended up not doing that because I do think in the end that these worlds are entirely separate and yet entirely codependent in a way that is unique to democracies.
Well, there's the alternative, and that is embedding reporters with military units or socializing. A lot of people in Washington go to the same parties, and critics have complained about that and how that would affect objectivity. I once asked Andrea Mitchell if she could be completely objective about Dick and Lynn Cheney because she and Alan Greenspan regularly ate at their home, and she said, she was very upset, she said, I'm a journalist. I can separate the private from the professional. And I don't think too many people, I've spoken to listeners, too many people bought that.
Well, I would say a couple things about that. First of all, I think you're right. And second of all, I would, forgive me, Andrea Mitchell, but I don't think she's a real journalist. I think she is a television personality. And there's a big difference. I also think that no actual people in the intelligence community actually have anything to do with anyone in the journalism community. I don't consider the Cheneys to have any knowledge on the ground or in the field about intelligence. And I would also say that you can socialize with people if the socialization happens in a completely private place. In other words, no one knows about it. But that doesn't happen between journalists and people who are on the ground intelligence. And I don't believe that reporters who are embedded actually get to know anyone in military intelligence at all.
This is a tightly plotted novel. How much are you willing to reveal in a radio interview?
I have no problem with that. If people don't want to, you know, this is a spoiler alert. If they don't want to know, I'm telling you right now, we're going to give you some keys to the plot.
And the basic premise is this pilot crashes.
This pilot crashes. She's an F-16 fighter pilot.
Are there many women flying F-16s these days?
There are women who are flying them. They are a small percentage, but I did speak to a woman who was an F-16 fighter pilot in preparation for this book, and she was assigned to St. Andrews Air Force Base and actually was scrambled on the day of 9/11. Mm-hmm. So there are some, and one of the things I wanted to do in this book is bring to life a new development in our history, which is that there are women who are seeing combat for the first time in American military history, and that's really extraordinary.
And this, I'm assuming, the plot of this book was inspired by the War on Terror and the response, the post 9/11 response, and what intelligence is probably trying to do to prevent similar attacks from what we saw the World Trade Center and the Pentagon.
Yes, and I think I learned from this military intelligence individual that I got to know that prevention is the thing that really is crucial. And that's something that you don't get to see much of because there's not arrests, there's not bombings. We're talking about something that is really about very intimate places in the society where these things are going on in terms of prevention.
Well, I've spoken to any number of people who've said to me, we're preventing the last attack. Nobody could have predicted that people would fly airplanes into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon. Now we may know how to deal with that, but any reasonable terrorist is going to do something totally different.
It's a battle of imaginative, you know, concoctions. And that, to me, is something that fiction is best suited to discuss and wonder about.
So as a reporter, you had certain limitations, although there are reporters who have been accused of creating fictions.
Yes, it's true.
The ideal, anyway, is to be limited to what you could uncover. But here you can talk about all sorts of things that you conjecture or that you really know but could never have put in a newspaper.
There are things that are very true in The Room in the Chair that I could never tell as being true things because then the person who told me about them couldn't have told me about them. So you could pick through this book and say, well, wait a minute, is this real? Is this not real? And you could find things that were real.
Well, this is the equivalent of the unidentified source, isn't it?
Well, it's actually very different from that because
the unnamed, because that's the big concern that we have in journalism today. So many things come from unnamed sources.
Yes, and obviously this is not purporting to be factual, but I'm saying that there are things in the novel that are, in fact, true. That's all.
I'm going to ask you to read a little bit from the novel, but can you tell us what the title refers to?
The Room in the Chair. The room is the newsroom of the paper, the newspaper, and the chair is the military intelligence chairman, if you will, the man who is in charge of all compartmented operations.
Special ops?
We call them special ops, but that's not really what they call them in that world. But anything that is operational, he's in charge of them because someone has to know about all of them so they don't interfere with one another and so that there's someone actually in charge and overseeing them.
Judging from this book, the military community has a very different language from the rest of us. Did you have to learn it the way you might learn French or German?
You know, I used a wonderful book. Well, I also talked to this guy about all these code words, you know, and there was a book called Code Words that came out around the time that I got to know this gentleman. And I remember going into Kramer's bookstore in DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C., and standing at the, and looking at the Code Words. And he said, "Oh, my God, they have one of my words." And I was so, like...
There was a leak.
I was so thrilled about that. It just seemed funny, you know? But anyway... that's what the chair means.
I wonder if Cy Hirsch has read that Code Words book.
Oh, I'm sure he has. So you want me to read the first?
Read whatever you wish. Just give to give us a sense of how you write, because you write in a very specific style, rather taut.
I'm going to.
But it's also been called poetic.
I'm gonna read just the first bit of the novel. This is the opening of the novel when the fighter pilot Mary. Discovers that she is in fact out of control of her airplane. She heard the air. It sounded like her Mustang on the interstate. She'd push its tut engine hard for the on-ramp. Dash would vibrate. She'd check mirrors. Trucks were there, scaring her sideways to the shoulder. She'd strain up to speed in the slow lane, flip the blinker to join the faster ones, relax into the drive, and only then would she realize the radio was a ruffle of lost words because the windshield was whistling on high. Air that loud was normal on the ground. Here in the cockpit, it was a sign.
Now, you couldn't write like that when you were a journalist. Do you think that it comes from a different part of your brain?
Well, I'm not a neuroscientist, but I will tell you this. People either like this kind of writing or they become exasperated and think it's pretentious and showy. When I was writing news stories, I was often accused of overwriting and various sins of the profession. And, you know, clarity, lucidity, kind of an Orwellian prose, if you will, is definitely valued there. And it's even valued in fiction. So this is not for everyone. This is for people who enjoy... writers like Sam Lipsight or, you know, much more people who are interested in rhythm and music and sound. And that's what I'm interested in for whatever. I can't really write the way I used to.
Since this book is also very much about what's going on in the world and allows you to, well, take your characters around the world, but also to comment on things like the Iraq War and the war in Afghanistan and on what's happening to journalism and popular online tools like Google, Skype, and Facebook are being used by people in the same business that we are being told they're wiping out. Not working for newspapers must be fun now because you can... you're allowed to have a much more overarching perspective.
Well, we were not allowed to have opinions. I mean, this was constantly drummed into our heads at staff meetings at the Washington Post. And Leonard Downey, famously, you know, never voted. He was the executive editor for many years while I was there. I think that this idea that you can be fair, they always said it's not really possible to be objective because you're a human being, but you can be fair. And being fair is very interesting, I think, for the first 40 years of one's life when one is actually trying to understand the world. But I'm at this stage in my life where I have opinions based on a wide range of experiences, and I want to be able to express those.
And you could be fair and also have opinions, can't you?
I think that that's a mirage, actually.
I would never try to beat anybody down. There are people in this business who have opinions. Listeners, I guess, can figure out some of my opinions. But it's not the same thing as having what seems like an agenda.
Boy, I just disagree.
You think you that know, Glenn Beck and I are the same thing?
Oh, no. But that doesn't mean that, you know... First of all, Glenn Beck is not just opinionated. He's a rabid kind of demagogue of a kind. I don't think that's not the same. I think, though,
I'm glad I'm not a rabid demagogue.
But you're not going out reporting and interviewing and then gathering data from courtrooms or other government agencies. It's a very different thing. And... If you're expressing an opinion. I just don't see how an op-ed page columnist can be fair. I think they have a point of view. Not to say that they're all like Glenn Beck, but...
You're writing another novel, I assume.
I am. It's set in Pakistan in the present day, and it's about a wedding. I've decided I'm not going to write about war, although this will be set in a war zone. I'm going to write about a wedding in a war zone.
The Room and the Chair is published by Knopf. It is Lorraine Adams' second novel, the second of what I assume is going to be many. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been a pleasure.